There were many paths that led up into those mountains, and many passes over them. But most of the paths were cheats and deceptions and led nowhere or to bad ends. And most of the passes were infested by evil things and dreadful dangers. The dwarves and the hobbit, helped by the wise advice of Elrond and the knowledge and memory of Gandalf, took the right road to the right pass. Long days after they had climbed out of the valley and left the last homely house, miles behind, they were still going up and up and up. It was a hard path and a dangerous path, a crooked way and a lonely and a long. Now they could look back over the lands they had left, laid out behind them far below, far, far away in the west where things were blue and faint. Bilbo knew there lay his own country of safe and comfortable things, and his little hobbit hole. He shivered. It was getting bitter cold up here, and the wind became shrill among the rocks. Boulders, too, at times came galloping down the mountainsides, let loose by the midday sun upon the snow, and passed among them, which was lucky, or over their heads, which was alarming. The nights were cold and comfortless, and they did not dare to sing or talk aloud, for the echoes were uncanny, and the silence seemed to dislike being broken, except by the noise of water and the wail of wind and the crack of stone. "The summer is getting along down below," thought Bilbo, "and haymaking is going on and picnics. They will be harvesting and blackberrying, and before we begin to get down the other side at this rate." And the others were thinking equally gloomy thoughts, although when they had said goodbye to Elrond in the high hope of a midsummer morning, they had spoken gaily of the passage in the mountains and of riding the swift lands beyond. They had thought of coming to the secret door in the lonely mountains, perhaps by the very next first moon of autumn. "Perhaps it will be Durin's day," they said. Only Gandalf had shaken his head and said nothing. Dwarves had not passed that way for many years, but Gandalf had, and he knew how evil and danger had grown and thriven in the wild, and since the dragons had driven men from the lands, and goblins had spread in secret after the Battle of the Mines of Moria. Even the good plans of wise wizards like Gandalf, and of good friends like Elrond, go astray sometimes when you are off on dangerous adventures over the edge of the wild, and Gandalf was a wise enough wizard to know it. He knew that something unexpected might happen, and he hardly dared to hope that they would pass without fearful adventure over those great tall mountains with lonely peaks and valleys where no king ruled. They did not. All was well until one day they met a thunderstorm. More than a thunderstorm, a thunder battle. You know how terrific a really big thunderstorm can be down in the land and in a river valley, especially at times when two great thunderstorms meet and clash. More terrible still are thunder and lightning in the mountains at night, when storms come up from the east and west and make war. The lightning splinters on the peaks, and rocks shiver, and great crashes split the air and go rolling and tumbling into every cave and hollow, and the darkness is filled with the overwhelming noise and sudden light. Bilbo had never seen or imagined anything of the kind. They were high up in a narrow place with a dreadful fall into a dim valley on one side of them. There they were sheltering under a hanging rock for the night, and he lay beneath a blanket and shook from head to toe. When he peeped out in the lightning flashes, he saw that across the valley the stone giants were out and hurling rocks at one another for a game, catching them and tossing them down into the darkness, where they smashed among the trees far below, or splintered into little bits with a bang. Then came a wind and a rain, and the wind whipped the rain and the hail about in every direction, so that an overhanging rock was no protection at all. Soon they were all getting drenched, and their ponies were standing with their heads down and their tails between their legs, and some of them were whinnying with fright. They could hear the giants guffawing and shouting all over the mountainsides. "This won't do at all," said Thorin. "If we don't get blown off or drowned or struck by lightning, we shall be picked up by some giant and kicked sky-high for a football." "Well, if you know of any place better, take us there," said Gandalf. who was feeling very grumpy and was far from happy about the giants himself. At the end of their argument was that they sent Feely and Keely to look for better shelter. They had very sharp eyes, being the youngest of the dwarves by some 50 years. They usually got these sort of jobs. When everybody else could see, it was absolutely no use sending Bilbo. There is nothing like looking if you want to find something, or so Thorin said to the young dwarves. You certainly usually find something if you look, but it is not always quite the something you were after. So it proved on this occasion. Soon Feely and Keely came crawling back, holding on the rocks in the wind. We have found a dry cave, they said, not far, round the next corner, and the ponies all could get inside. Have you thoroughly explored it? Said the wizard, who knew that caves up in the mountains were seldom unoccupied. Yes, yes, they said, though everybody knew they could not have been long about it. They had come back too quick. It isn't all that big, and it does not go far back. That, of course, is the dangerous part about caves. You can't know how far they go back, sometimes, or where a passage behind might lead to, or what is waiting for you inside. But now Feely and Keely's news seemed good enough. So they all got up and prepared to move. The wind was howling and the thunder still growling, and they had a business getting themselves and their ponies along. Still, it was not very far to go, and before long they came to a big rock standing out in the path. If you stepped behind, you found a low arch in the side of the mountain. There was just room to get the ponies through with a squeeze, and when they had been unpacked and unsaddled, as they passed under the arch, it was good to hear the wind and the rain outside instead of all around them, and to feel safe from the giants and their rocks. But the wizard was taking no risks. He lit up his wand, as he did that day in Bilbo's dining room that seemed so long ago, if you remember, and by its light explored the cave from end to end. It seemed quite a fair size, but not too large and mysterious. It had a dry floor and some comfortable nooks. At one end there was room for the ponies, and there they stood, mighty glad of the change, steaming and champing out of their nose bags. Oin and Gloin wanted to light a fire at the door to dry their clothes, but Gandalf would not hear of it. So they spread their wet things on the floor and got dry ones out of their bundles, and then they made their blankets comfortable, got out their pipes and blew smoke rings, which Gandalf turned into different colors and set dancing upon the roof to amuse them. They talked and talked and forgot about the storm, and discussed what each would do with his share of the treasure, when they got it, which at that moment did not seem so impossible. And so they dropped off to sleep, one by one. And that was the last time that they used the ponies, packages, baggages, tools, and paraphernalia that they brought with them. It turned out to be a good thing that night that they had brought little Bilbo with them after all, for somehow he could not get to sleep for a long while, and when he did sleep, he had very nasty dreams. He dreamed that a crack in the wall in the cave grew bigger and bigger and opened wider and wider. And he was very afraid, but did not call out or do anything but lie and look. And then he dreamed that the floor of the cave was giving way, and that he was slipping, beginning to fall down, down, goodness knows where to. And at that he woke with a horrible start, and found that part of his dream was true. A crack had opened at the back of the cave, and was already a wide passage. He was just in time to see the last of the ponies' tails disappearing into it. Of course he gave a very loud a yell as a hobbit can give, which is surprising for their size. Out jumped goblins, big goblins, great ugly-looking goblins, lots of goblins, before you could say rocks and blocks. There were 6 to each dwarf, at least, and 2 even for Bilbo, and they were all grabbed and carried through the crack before you could say tinder and flint. But not Gandalf. Bilbo's yell had done that much good. It had wakened him up wide in a splintered second, and when the goblins came to grab him, there was a terrible flash like lightning in the cave, and a smell like gunpowder, and several of them fell dead. The crack closed with a snap, and Bilbo and the dwarves were on the wrong side of it. Where was Gandalf? Of that neither they nor the goblins had any idea, and the goblins did not wait to find out. It was deep, deep dark, such as only goblins have taken to living in the heart of mountains can see through. The passages that were crossed tangled in all directions, But the goblins knew their way, as well as you do to the nearest post office, and they went down and down, and it was most horribly stuffy. The goblins were rough and pinched unmercifully, and chuckled and laughed in their horrible stony voices, and Bilbo was more unhappy than when the troll had picked them up by the toes. He wished again and again and again for his nice bright hobbit hole, and not for the last time. Now there came a glimmer of red light before them. The goblins began to sing, or croak, keeping time with the flap of their feet on the stone and shaking their prisoners as well. Clap, snap, the black crack. Grip, grab, pinch, nab, and down, down to Goblin Town you go, my lad. Crash, crash, crush, smash, hammer and tongs, knocker and gongs. Pound, pound, far underground. Ho, ho, my lad. Swish, smack, whip, crack. Batter and beat, yammer and bleat, work, work, nor dare to shirk, while goblins quaff and goblins laugh, round and round, far underground, below, my lad. It sounded truly terrifying. The walls echoed to the clap, snap, and the crush, smash, and to the ugly laughter of their ho, 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 my lad. The general meaning of the song was only too plain, for now the goblins took out whips and whipped them with a swish, smack, and sent them running as fast as they could in front of them, and more than one of the dwarfs were already yammering and bleeding like anything, and when they stumbled into a big cavern. It was lit by a great red fire in the middle and by torches along the walls, and it was full of goblins. They all laughed and stamped and clapped their hands, and when the dwarfs, with poor little Bilbo at the back and nearest the whips, came running in, while the goblin drivers whooped and cracked their whips behind. The ponies were already there, huddled in a corner, and there were all the baggages and packages lying broken open, and being rummaged by goblins, and smelt by goblins, and fingered by goblins, and quarreled over by goblins. I am afraid to say that was the last they ever saw of those excellent little ponies, including a jolly sturdy fellow that Elrond had lent to Gandalf, since his horse was not suitable for the mountain paths. For goblins eat horses and ponies and donkeys and other much more dreadful things, and they are always hungry. Just now the prisoners were thinking only of themselves. The goblins chained their hands behind their backs, linked them all together in a line, and dragged them to the far end of the cavern, with little Bilbo tugging at the end of the row.